teaching you at summer camp? Clark asked.
The only thing I learned is that Janice is sort of a bitch, and Sloppy Joes are still disgusting.
I can't believe you won't let me meet her, Solomon said. She sounds so fun.
I think she hates me, Clark added.
Who could hate you?
Solomon asked.
I know, right?
Clark stood up and walked over to the sliding glass door. He looked out at the backyard and then turned towards Solomon.
You ready for tomorrow? He asked.
Don't know. Solomon got up and walked over to stand beside him. He gazed out at the empty pool, half filled with moonlight and half with darkness. And the only thing he could think about was how useless it was without water. Just a weird-shaped concrete hole in the backyard.
Maybe you should go out there tonight, Lisa said.
What? Why?
Your parents aren't home, so that pressure's off. Maybe we all just walk right outside like it's nothing.
Like it's nothing? Solomon asked. It's not nothing.
I know, she said. But we can make it nothing, Sol. Let's make it nothing.
She walked over and reached for his hand. For a second, he thought about giving it to her. About letting her drag him out there and getting it over with.
Pull it like a band-aid, his grandma would say.
But he couldn't.
Not tonight, Lisa.
Tomorrow, then, Clark said,
quickly patting Solomon's right shoulder with one hand.
It's going to be great, buddy.
Solomon couldn't sleep that night. He wished it were like Christmas when he was a kid, that nervous excitement keeping him up in anticipation of a living room full of new toys and gadgets. But it was more like an aching pit in his stomach, a deep, low pain that pulsated all night and constantly reminded him of what the next day would bring. At 3 in the morning, he tiptoed down the hallway in just a pair of pajama pants. He stepped into the living room, staring at the sliding glass door like he was staring deep into the void of space, a black hole leading into a world that had been so far out of his reach for so long. He moved closer, close enough to grip the door handle, close enough to see his breath on the glass. And then he slid it open. He didn't move, but the cool early morning breeze swirled around in his face, lifting patches of his shaggy hair and making him shiver. He wasn't going to cry or anything, and he didn't feel anxious or especially loopy either. He was so close to the outside, but he was still standing, and that helped his breathing even out a bit. His heartbeat was strong, but not frantic like all the other times he'd secretly tried to go out there. All those times he'd never told anyone about. Now it was different, though. He was ready. And the pain in his stomach was starting to go away. So he just went for it. He stepped outside. And then he kept going, until he was walking down the pool steps and into the deep end. When he got there, where the drain sat brand new and ready, he lay down on the faux pebble surface and looked up at the stars. And that's where they found him sleeping the next morning.
Chapter 20. Lisa Prater. Most people her age wouldn't have been awake at 8:30 a.m. when Solomon called the next day, but Lisa wasn't like most people. She'd already showered, gotten dressed, straightened her hair, and had a bagel with cream cheese. Sleeping in was for the unmotivated. "You're up early?" she answered. "Guess where I am." "Very funny." "No, really, guess." "Your bedroom?" "I'm in the backyard, Lisa." "Shut your mouth." "I won't. I can't. I'm outside. It's nice out here, right? Oh, my God, Saul! Listen to me. I'm okay. Why aren't you over here yet? Where's Clark? Is there even any water in the pool? They just started filling it up. Said we could swim at 5 or 6. I'm not sure I can make it that long. Wait, you're outside right now? Yeah, sitting in the grass. I didn't realize I missed doing this. Wow, this is... It was weird. I couldn't sleep at all. So in the middle of the night, I just opened the door and walked out here. Amazing. I fell asleep in the pool. You what? Dad found me before he left for work. I've never seen him so happy. I can imagine, she said. I bet your mom cried. She was already at work, but I'm sure she'll attack me when she gets home. This is so great, Saul. How do you feel right now? Like I passed the entrance exam for Starfleet Academy. I'm going to guess that means good. I feel awesome. Did you know you can hear the freeway from my backyard? Mine too, she said. I'm going to call and wake Clark up and then head over. Don't get tired of being outside before we get there. Yeah, right. Lisa couldn't get Clark on the phone, so she drove over to his mom's and banged on the door until someone answered. It was Drew, and she was not happy to be awake. Lisa? She said, sleepy-eyed. Hey, sorry, is he here? She stepped around her and walked down the hallway toward his room. She thought about knocking, but she didn't. She walked right in and found him asleep with one leg hanging over the side of the bed and his face completely covered by a blanket. Clark? She whispered loudly. He didn't move. Clark! He shot up and out of the bed so fast that Lisa jumped back, afraid he'd start swinging his fists or something. Then she laughed and looked him up and down. Clark, you're naked.
Shit, sorry.
He grabbed the blanket and wrapped it around himself. Then he sat down on the bed. This I did not know about you, she said. Must get cold.
What time is it?
8:45. I know it's early, but Saul went outside.
What?
Yeah, he just called me. We have to go see this.
Okay, right. Don't look.
He quickly stood up and slid on a pair of boxers that was lying on the floor. Lisa pretended not to look, but it had been a while since she'd been alone with him, and even longer since she'd seen this much of his body. I mean, we could wait 15 minutes or so, she said suggestively, reaching over to grab his wrist.
Are you kidding me?
He pulled his arm away.
He's outside. We've got to get over there.
With a defeated look on her face, Lisa watched as he threw on a pair of shorts and a t-shirt. Then, just as she stood up to follow him out, he turned back and gave her a huge smile.
I need swim trunks, don't I?
Yeah, she said. And sunscreen. On the drive over, Clark couldn't stop talking about how proud he was of their friend. He used words like pumped and psyched, and every time he said Solomon's name, Lisa felt a little pang of jealousy. He'd just had the chance to sleep with his girlfriend, and instead, he was going on and on about someone else. Lisa had created this monster, but she no longer had any control over it. I told you it would work, she said.
You're joking, right?
Clark asked, rolling his eyes. But look what it's done, she defended. He's outside. It's only a matter of time before he goes even farther.
Okay, Dr. Prater, he said with sarcasm.
Lisa thought he was joking, but the second she went to speak again, she noticed the serious look on his face and stopped herself. The rest of the ride was silent, with Lisa staring straight ahead at the road and Clark looking down at his phone. When they pulled up in the driveway, she turned to him and didn't have to say anything for him to respond.
Lisa, hear me out. If you write that essay, I'm telling him,
he said, never looking her way as he got out of the car. When they stepped into the backyard, there he was, wearing a pair of sunglasses and lying back on a lounge chair, his arms up over his head. Lisa hadn't seen Solomon without a shirt on before, and she could definitely tell he hadn't lied about all those crunches. Clark ran across the yard and started lifting Solomon up off the chair to give him a hug.
Look what this guy's been hiding, he yelled to Lisa,
pointing at Solomon's pale, bare torso. You're going to be a lobster, she said. Do you have sunscreen on?
I do, I swear, Solomon answered.
Clark lifted up one of Solomon's arms and smelled it.
He's lying, he said. Here, we brought some.
Thanks. Solomon rubbed the sunscreen on his arms, and then Lisa walked over to help him get his back. If you die of skin cancer, we won't have anywhere to swim, she said. They sat outside, watching the pool slowly fill with water. Solomon didn't seem to be tired of the sun yet, so they figured they'd stay out there for as long as he wanted. And every time he got up and walked to a new part of the yard, Lisa watched him like he was an astronaut walking around on some distant planet, his every step further proof that anything is possible.
How much longer?
Solomon asked them, nearly shouting from the other side of the yard. It looked like he'd been inspecting the flowers under his parents' window, but Lisa wasn't sure.
Well, Clark said loudly, with a hose that size, about 5/8 of an inch in diameter, you're delivering 17 gallons of water per minute, which is 1,020 gallons an hour, so with a 5,000-gallon pool, it should take about 5 more hours.
What the hell? Solomon asked, walking up to them. He read it off his phone, Lisa said. Clark held up his phone and gave Solomon a big smile. Then he hopped up onto his feet and told them to pose for a picture.
We have to document this important day in history, he said.
Solomon bent down and put one arm around Lisa's shoulders. This was the most he'd ever touched her, and she couldn't help but flinch a little out of shock. Sorry, he said, pulling away. No. She grabbed his arm to keep it in place. Clark had been taking pictures of the three of them for weeks, but he usually tried to keep it as subtle as possible, quickly snapping a shot of Lisa and Solomon as they looked down at their cards or watched TV. Lisa noticed every time, though, and now she wondered what she'd find on his phone from all the days she'd spent away. Surely he wouldn't have taken photos of Solomon all by himself. That would be strange, wouldn't it? But even if he did, then so what? Friends take pictures of their friends all the time. It was perfectly normal. She didn't need to check his phone. That wouldn't help anything. It was all so stupid. Janice had really gotten to her, and she was starting to find it a bit more aggravating than it was amusing. Hey, she said, let's go in and eat something, huh? Saul, can you sacrifice a few minutes of daylight? Don't want to get too tired of it on day one.
I guess, he said, faking disappointment. I'm starving anyway. I want peanut butter and jelly, Clark said. All of it that's in the world.
My mom buys extra for him, Solomon told Lisa. Then Clark froze just outside of the door and turned to face them.
You're not going to be stuck again if we go inside, are you?
Dude, Solomon said, stepping past him and through the doorway. I've been doing this all day. Relax. Once inside, they made their way to the kitchen, where she listened to the two of them banter back and forth about how to make the perfect PB&J. They both had it all wrong. You've got to stir the peanut butter and jelly together before applying it to the bread. Then they sort of ventured off into their own little world and left Lisa sitting there to watch, unable to get a word in edgewise. Maybe that was her fault, for all the time she'd spent quietly observing them and studying Solomon's tics and triggers. It was like they spoke a language she'd only just forgotten. She could pick up on some of their references, but mostly found herself completely lost in their jargon. So, Lisa eventually stopped trying to understand them and let her mind drift back to her conversation with Clark. She knew he'd probably never forgive her if she wrote that essay, but she also knew she had to. It was a surefire way to save herself, and she was too close to give up now. Just as Solomon needed to leave the house, Lisa needed to leave Upland. He was better. She did that. She deserved to get out, too.
Chapter 21. Solomon Reed. For Solomon, swimming was the opposite of a panic attack. Fluid and calm and quiet. The world was muffled just enough when he went under, and the way the wind felt on his wet skin when he came up for air made him forget he was closer to all the things that scared him so much, and had for so long.
As he got into the pool for the first time, his family and friends looking on in silence, he felt like he could cry. And he did. But just a little. And to avoid it being a big deal, he fell face first into the water and then came up smiling. After that, he wouldn't stop swimming long enough for anyone to ask if he was okay. But, of course he was. Nothing worked like the water. When Solomon's dad cannonballed into the pool, he waded over to his son and made a big show out of trying to kiss him on the forehead. And all his mom could do was take pictures. This look in her eyes like she was documenting a miracle. Finally, after they'd been begging her for an hour, she got in the pool and joined them for Marco Polo. "He'll never get him," Solomon said to his mom and Lisa. They were all sitting on the edge of the pool in the shallow end by the stairs, an area Solomon's dad had designated as the loser zone. He'd caught all three of them, but hadn't even gotten close to Clark once. He drifted slowly through the water like an alligator watching its prey, his nose above the surface just enough to breathe, and the rest of him hidden underneath. He'd let Solomon's dad get close enough to touch him, and he'd answer polo in a whisper, and sort of magically float right by him to one side. He was taunting him, and every time he did hold his face out of the water, he'd shoot a huge grin over toward his audience. Solomon, Clark, and Lisa stayed in the pool long enough to see the sunset, and slowly watch the moon creep up to the center of the sky. They only got out to eat, pee, or when their fingers turned so pruny they started aching. Around 10, after Solomon's parents had gone to bed, the three of them lay side by side, Solomon in the middle, with their feet in the water, and their backs resting on the cold, pebbly ground that surrounded the pool. "If this were an indie movie, we'd start talking about the constellations," Solomon said, looking up at the stars. "I always thought Ursa Major would be a cool name," Clark said.
"Hi, I'm Ursa Major Robbins. Nice to meet you."
"Ursa Major Reed, attorney at law," Solomon added. "God, I miss this view." "It is pretty damn good, isn't it?" Lisa said. At midnight, they finally said goodbye. He walked them to the front door, a towel around his waist, and his half-wet hair sticking up and out in all directions. Lisa kissed him on the cheek and whispered into his ear. "I'm so proud of you," she said. Then Clark attacked him with a bear hug that raised him off his feet. And despite it hurting his mildly sunburned arms, that was the best hug of his life. Once they were gone, he walked back outside and sat by the pool. There were no lights on in the backyard except for the one that shone from the deep end and cast a whitish-blue glow all over Solomon's skin. He dipped his feet in the water, watching ripples as they moved out in tiny little glowing waves, and he closed his eyes to listen to the only sound he could hear, water lapping against the side of the pool. He thought about sleeping out there again, curling up on a lounge chair and letting the daylight wake him. He'd missed the sun, realizing now how stupid it had been to think he could live without it. He felt a pang of guilt as he looked around the backyard, tracing the top of the wooden fence with his eyes. Maybe he could have been coming out here this whole time. It felt so easy now. All it took was one step, and it was like it had never been off-limits. Like he hadn't gone 3 years without touching the grass, or feeling the sun on his skin, or shivering in the night breeze. Is this what getting better felt like? And if all he had to do was close his eyes and take a step to make everything better, then why couldn't he just do it? Just rip it like a Band-Aid. Why did the thought of walking out that front door still make him feel like his heart was imploding? "This is all I need,"
he said aloud into the darkness of the yard. But even he wasn't sure he believed it anymore. The next day, Solomon woke up to the sound of his grandma's voice, echoing down the hall and into his bedroom. His parents were at work, so he knew she was on the phone with a client or something, probably being intentionally loud to wake him up. When he walked into the kitchen a few minutes later, she was sitting at the counter with her reading glasses barely on the tip of her nose and a newspaper in her hands. For a minute, she didn't see him, so she kept reading and humming to herself. Grandma? She threw the paper down, jumped up, and ran across the kitchen to hug him. She planted a big, loud kiss on the side of his face and then squeezed him again. So tight, she took the wind out of his lungs.
Okay, okay, he said, backing up. You're freaking me out.
Look at you. You've already got a tan.
It's a sunburn.
Sunburn, schmunburn. You look alive, kid, like somebody brought you back from the dead.
Thanks, he said. You bring your swimsuit. The pool's awesome.
No, no. I've got 3 houses to show by 5. I just came to see it for myself.
The pool?
Are you kidding? I've seen thousands of pools, Solomon. I want to see you out there. Go on. Start walking. I'm very busy.
When he stepped out into the backyard, she did the hug and loud kiss thing all over again. He thanked her for the pool, but she wouldn't hear it, choosing instead to take pictures of him standing in the grass and by the fence and sitting on the diving board. By the time she was done, his face was sore from all the smiling.
I miss the mountains, he said, pointing over into the distance. I never liked them, she said. Don't get it.
Really? I love them.
Yeah, well, I always wanted to live by the beach when I moved out here. I did for a while, you know. Back when I was trying to be an actress, some girlfriends and I got a place in Long Beach. It wasn't as nice back then, but we could afford it, and it was close enough to the city to carpool to casting calls and our real jobs, waitressing.
So why'd you move out here, then?
Your grandpa. This was his hometown, and he wasn't going to live anywhere else. He made that very clear when we met. And despite my better judgment, I married him anyway.
You know you loved him, he said. Why are you always talking trash about Grandpa?
Tell you a secret?
Yeah?
Makes it easier. If I pretend all he did was drive me crazy, I don't miss him so much. It works.
Maybe it's bad, but it works.
I wish I'd met him. He would have loved you. You're like he was. He kept to himself, mostly. But when you caught him in the right mood, he'd talk for hours. He'd tell stories till he was blue in the face. Did you hear the one about whatever? I see that in your dad sometimes, too.
3 generations of crazy.
A loony legacy, she said.
A straight coat of arms.
You win.
Are you going to make me swim, too? He asked. I think my trunks are in the washer.
No, she said. Just promise me you won't drown in this nice, expensive pool while no one's here all day, okay? Don't give me that to live with for the next 20 years.
I bet you've got more than 20.
Shh, she snapped. I'm a dinosaur. Give me a hug so I can go earn your inheritance back.
Once he was alone, he didn't bother going to get his trunks. Instead, he walked back to the pool, threw his PJs and T-shirt onto the ground, and jumped right in. He swam around for a while, sometimes breaking to float on his back and get warm from the sun before diving back down to the bottom and turning flips all the way back up. He hadn't heard the doorbell inside, So he had the absolute shit scared out of him when he popped up from the water to take a big breath, and Clark Robbins was standing at the edge of the pool with a huge smile on his face.
"Holy shit!"
Solomon yelled, quickly covering his privates with both hands and going back underwater. He thought maybe it was all a hallucination, some weird effect of all this swimming after so many years without it. But he opened his eyes and looked up to see the cloudy image of his friend looking down at him. Then, just as he was about to come up for air, Clark jumped in. When his head was above water, he saw Clark's clothes, all of his clothes, lying on the ground. He looked over where he'd jumped in and watched the shiny figure swim down toward the bottom. He was too embarrassed and paranoid to stick his head underwater and try for a better view, but he did consider it. When Clark's head popped up by the diving board, he looked right at Solomon and smiled.
"Don't judge. It's effing cold in here."
"I'm not looking," Solomon said quickly. "How'd you get in?"
"Door was unlocked," he said, starting to swim closer.
"Weird." It was the first time Solomon had ever forgotten to lock the front door. Ever. And if very naked Clark hadn't been swimming toward him, he would have had time to freak out about that, too.
"So this old ploy, this swimming pool thing, was just so you could skinny dip, huh?"
"For sure," Solomon said. "Caught me. I'll go get my trunks in a second."
"Nobody here but us."
"Lisa?"
"Said she wasn't feeling well. Told me to keep you company."
Solomon, still naked, still covering his business with both hands, eyed his towel where it sat, impossibly far away on a chair. Clark was just swimming around the pool behind him like everything was normal. Solomon stayed in one spot for a while, unable to move. Too embarrassed and confused and overwhelmed to do anything but try to seem like he wasn't watching Clark. But how could he not be watching him? He was naked and swimming all around him. It was like every gay dude's dream come true. A naked athlete floating around in the backyard. Or maybe it was just Solomon's dream with this particular athlete. Either way, it was happening, and his eyes didn't know where to go.
"Hey," Clark said, swimming up way too close to him. "You're blushing."
"Sunburn," he said, trying his best not to look down.
"I'll go get my shorts."
Clark used both hands to pull himself out of the water, and Solomon watched as he walked across the yard, his bare white butt right there for all the neighborhood to see. He took his swim trunks off the fence where he'd left them drying the night before. And since Clark was looking the other way, Solomon quickly climbed out of the pool and wrapped a nearby towel around his waist.
"I'm going to go grab mine," he said, walking across the yard and into the house.
When he returned, Clark was in the water doing a handstand. He waited for him to come up for air before jumping back in, and then he swam to the shallow end and took a seat on one of the steps.
"You okay, man?"
Clark asked, wading toward him.
"Yeah,"
he said, unconvincingly. "Totally."
"Hey, look, I'm used to the locker room and a house with three brothers. I shouldn't have done that."
"It's not a big deal," he said. I don't know. Sorry I'm being weird."
"Sol," Clark said, moving closer. "It's okay. You can look. Just don't touch."
"Jerk,"
he said, a smile forcing its way onto his face.
"Really, though, I'm sorry if I made you uncomfortable. You're like my brother or something. I just didn't even think twice about it."
Solomon went underwater, opened his eyes, and let the words echo and sink in and swim all around in his head. "Like my brother."
He shook it off and challenged Clark to a race. Clark won, of course, but Solomon came surprisingly close, especially for someone so out of practice. He also couldn't help being distracted by Clark, watching him as he moved through the water. He liked the way his hair looked when it was wet, slicked back like an old movie star. And he was fascinated by the little patch of dark hair Clark had growing in the center of his chest. "I didn't see that in your water polo pictures. The ones Lisa showed me," Solomon said.
"I shave it during the season. Don't make fun."
"Hey, I can't even grow one hair on my chest.
Respect."
"My dad looks like a grizzly bear with his shirt off. I'm so jealous," Clark said. "I want, like, caveman body hair. The kind that hovers all around you, you know? That's the manliest you can get."
"And why do you need to be so manly?"
"Well, she won't tell you, but it's Lisa's thing. She likes a real scruffy sort of guy. Maybe I should grow a beard."
"Lumbersexual," Solomon said. "I think that's what they call it."
"Nice," Clark said. "I want a beard, and to be covered in body hair, and then I'll marry Lisa, and we'll move to Portland or something and build a tiny house."
"That's your dream?"
"I think so," Clark said, immediately following it with a backflip in the water.
Solomon got quiet after that, but he tried to talk just enough for Clark not to sense anything. He was so angry at himself for letting this happen, for feeling the way he felt about Clark. No matter how hard he tried, he couldn't shake it either. And long after Clark had gone home, Solomon stayed up wondering if everyone falls in love with someone who can't love them back.
Chapter 22. Lisa Prater. Lisa was pretending to be sick so she wouldn't have to spend another whole day watching Solomon Reed steal her boyfriend. And it was that kind of thinking that told her she needed to talk to someone. That someone had to be Janice. Not the Janice from camp, fueled by anger and jealousy, but the one she'd known her whole life, who could sometimes suspend her self-righteousness just long enough to say all the right things. As Lisa knocked on the door, she closed her eyes and turned her head to one side, almost hoping no one would answer. "What?" Janice barked, swinging the door open. "Hi. What do you want, Lisa?" "We have to talk." "No, we don't." Lisa knew what she had to do. The only way to reconcile with someone like Janice, who lived for drama, was to give her a good old-fashioned emotional breakdown. It was through tears that she got her real strength, and Lisa was ready to pay up. So she silently stepped forward and hugged Janice around the neck, putting as much of her weight on her shoulders as possible. Lisa was prepared to put on a performance, but she hadn't expected the floodgates to open like they did, and before she knew it, she and Janice were both sobbing in each other's arms. It didn't take long before they'd made up. They were more like sisters than either of them would ever admit, so they'd had their fair share of big blow-ups in the past. Lisa wanted to take Janice to lunch, so she waited while her friend got ready and then drove her to a sandwich place downtown. They sat outside, and Lisa looked over the menu while Janice texted someone, her fingers furiously tapping her phone screen. Then she let out a big laugh and kept texting, completely ignoring Lisa and everything else around her. "Who's that?" Lisa asked. She set the phone face down and gave her friend a big, sneaky smile. "I thought you'd never ask. I have a boyfriend." "A what? That's awesome. His name's Trevor Blackwell. We met at Camp Christ is Risen. Last year?" "Yeah, but he had a girlfriend, so I waited and prayed, and then a couple weeks ago, he messaged me and said they broke up. You've got to see him. He's like a model or something." Janice picked her phone back up, clicked a few times, and handed it to Lisa. He was attractive enough, in that unassuming sort of way, like the best friend in every movie you've ever seen. Lisa hammed it up, though. "He's so cute, Janice. That smile. Maybe I should go to this camp. We met during a reenactment of the crucifixion. Your first date was a crucifixion? Reenactment, Janice corrected. It wasn't a date. It was love at first sight. Lisa couldn't help imagining these lovebirds standing in the woods while two high schoolers pretended to whip a dude dressed like Jesus in the background. I'm glad, Janice. You seem really happy. I am, she said, grabbing her phone. I just wish he lived closer. Where's he live? Tustin, but it may as well be Jupiter. That's not that far, Lisa said. Like an hour. An hour is an eternity when you're this in love. But I'll see him at camp next week. Janice, please don't get knocked up at Christian camp. Can you imagine? My mom would kill me. You could always call it a miracle virgin birth, maybe. Well, gosh, I hadn't thought of that. After lunch, they went to a serve-yourself yogurt shop around the corner. It had been their spot once, after school and sometimes on Sundays. It was weird being there after so long, and Lisa was feeling a little overwhelmed by Janice's non-stop talking. So, how are your boyfriends? Janice asked. Good, she said. Just, yeah, good. Look, I'm sorry for what I said, okay? It wasn't fair. And what do I know anyway? Maybe you were right, Lisa said, louder than she intended, and then threw her head down to hide her face in her arms. What? I think maybe I was wrong, she said, her face still covered. He's gay? Janice asked in a whisper, leaning down. Lisa shot her head up and let herself slide down in the plastic chair. I don't know. He spends all his time with Saul. All his time. And when he's not doing that, he's talking about him or making plans with him. I didn't even realize it was happening, and now I think it's too late. Well, you're born gay, so if it's true, it was too late a long time ago, Lisa. I guess so. Spending all their time together doesn't make them gay, either. It makes them, I don't know, two loners who found each other, maybe. True. So you could be reading too much into it. You need to be sure before you do anything. What's there to do? I love him. He knows that. But it just feels weird between us now. Even if he was gay, would Clark lie to you? Yeah, that's the part I can't figure out. Plus, even if he is lying, shouldn't I be supportive? I can't make him feel guilty about being who he really is. There's a difference in being yourself and cheating on someone. You think Clark would do that to you? And aren't you and Solomon close? Would he do that? I don't think so, she said. But what if they can't help it? Then at least maybe you'll get your scholarship. I thought you disapproved. I do. But I mean, it's a unique perspective. Plus, you could get a lot of sympathy if you go for the whole crazy kid stole my boyfriend angle. Clark doesn't want me to do it. He said he'd tell Saul about the essay if I write it. Just another reason I think he cares more about him than he does me. No way, she said. He's just doing the right thing. I know. So maybe I just need to tell him, huh? Tell Solomon the truth and hope it doesn't reverse all the progress he's made. He's made progress? Oh, yeah. He goes into the backyard now. And you think it's because of you? I think he needed a push, and I gave him one, she said confidently. Lisa, if he finds out you lied, could he get worse than he was before? I don't know. That's why I'm so afraid. Okay, hang on a second, Janice said. So you don't think Clark will forgive you if you write the paper unless you get Solomon's permission, which could wreck the whole thing? Something like that, Lisa said, staring down blankly at the floor. And if I write it without his permission, Clark's going to tell him anyway. Okay, then. I'll say a prayer, Janice added. Lisa knew she'd need more than a prayer if she was going to keep Clark, Solomon, and the essay. In a perfect world, Solomon would be touched that she'd chosen to find and help him, and Clark would be impressed with her maturity and honesty, so much so that he'd either be honest with her in return or wake up and stop acting like he didn't care about their relationship anymore. But this wasn't a perfect world. This was the world that Solomon Reed had run away from, and the more Lisa thought about it, the less ridiculous that idea sounded to her. After all, wasn't she just trying to run away from the little part of the world that scared her, too?
Chapter 23. Solomon Reed. Sometimes Solomon had issues with guilt, and he couldn't talk to anyone about it, because he was afraid that would make it worse. He saw it like this. He didn't have any real problems. People starved to death. People got diseases. People's homes burned down, got torn apart by tornadoes, got repossessed. He was a spoiled kid in suburbia who was too high-strung to deal with the real world. Lisa and Clark came along and made things better, though. Way better. But that didn't help any with the guilt. In fact, every time they left his house, he'd get a shooting pain deep in his stomach, remembering that this is all he could be for them. And he was scared, too. He was afraid they'd always be waiting for him to change, even more than he already had. Being outside had reinvigorated him, sure, but it hadn't made him want to leave the house. It got him closer, of course it did. But that was a long time away, and he knew it. Now he had everything he needed, and friends who would come see him, invitation or not. He wasn't so sure this was a step in the direction they all wanted. But he still held out hope that he'd get there eventually. That one day, he'd wake up, and it wouldn't be enough for him anymore. Solomon didn't know what it felt like to be in love. He'd seen it a million times, big and sweeping and beautiful in TV and movies. But he'd always wondered what it actually felt like to think about another person that much, to lose himself in someone else. Now he was thinking maybe he knew. The day after his impromptu skinny dip with Clark, Solomon called his grandma. It was time, he'd decided. He'd tell her how he felt about Clark, and she'd have some pearl of wisdom for him. Some southern saying that would hit him in all the right places and put things into perfect perspective. That, or she'd ask him something inappropriate about gay sex and he'd get too embarrassed to keep talking to her.
"Joan Reed Realty, we'll take you home," she answered.
"Hi, Grandma."
"Michael Phelps, is that you?"
"Funny. Want to have lunch with your grandson?"
"Well, isn't this a nice surprise? You finally have some time for me?
Did your friends drown in the pool?"
"I thought you wanted me to have friends."
"I do.
You know I'm just picking on you. What do you want, In-N-Out?"
"You read my mind."
When she got there, Grandma insisted they eat their cheeseburgers outside on the back patio. Solomon was sort of afraid he'd never get to be inside the house with his grandma again.
"What's on your mind?"
she asked, taking a bite.
"Nothing."
"You haven't called to invite me for lunch since you were 14. So what's buttering your biscuit?"
"What?"
"What's bothering you?
Context clues, Solomon. Context clues."
"Sorry. I think I'm in love."
"You're kidding me,"
she said, dropping the burger onto her plate.
"With Lisa."
"Clark," he said with a shaky voice.
"Shut up," she said, nearly shouting. "I can't wait to tell my friends. I'm the first with a gay grandson. They'll be so jealous."
"Jealous?"
"Sweetie, come on. I'm hip. You think your grandma hasn't been dancing in West Hollywood before?"
"You have?"
"The gays love me. I think it's my accent."
"It's definitely your accent," he said. "Anyway, so, yeah.
Clark. You can do better," she said bluntly, No, Grandma. It's not like that. He's straight.
I see. This is what's so complicated. You have to date and figure out who plays for your team. It must be exhausting.
I don't want to hurt Lisa's feelings either.
Of course not. She's been good to you, Saul.
I know.
You sure he's,
you know, not into you? She asked.
First off, please don't say that. And yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. To me, it seems weird for a straight boy to spend all his time with a gay boy.
But just saying that aloud makes me think I'm completely wrong.
Me too.
Is he your best friend, Saul? She asked. Do you guys talk about everything?
Pretty much.
Then you know what you need to do.
Talk to him.
Exactly.
Thanks, Grandma.
I think you're right. I don't want to lose him. Just be careful, okay? Don't get your feelings hurt too bad. We are who we are. You know that better than anyone.
Solomon knew the second he told his grandma about being gay that it wasn't a secret anymore. You remember that she liked gossip about as much as Solomon liked Star Trek, so telling everyone had been his plan from the start. But how would he do it? How do you tell the two people who know everything about you that they actually don't? He walked into the kitchen and hopped up onto the counter, watching his parents chop vegetables in silence until they acknowledged him.
"What's up, kiddo?"
his dad finally asked. Then this came out.
"Mom, Dad, there's this episode of The Next Generation called The Drumhead, and in it this medical technician named Tarsus is accused of sabotaging the ship. The investigator, this super hard ass, then tells everyone that Tarsus lied on his Starfleet Academy entrance application by saying that he was 1/4 Vulcan when, in fact, he was 1/4 Romulan.
Fascinating, his dad joked.
Okay, where was I? He looked all around, like the words were scrolling past him in the air and he was trying to read them.
Right, see the Romulans. Oh boy, where do I even begin with the Romulans? Things aren't great with them all the time, okay? There's a lot of bad blood. And don't be confused with the original Star Trek, because in that series, the Romulans are always bad guys. And in the movie reboots, too. Did you guys see the movie reboots?
Yes, his mom said, a confused look on her face. You're losing us, Saul.
Anyway, to be a Vulcan is just, it's better, right? Because Vulcans are peaceful, and they're all about logic and reason over emotion. But see, the Romulans are all emotion. Passionate and cunning, it's what fuels them. They're always getting pissed and causing a lot of trouble, and see, the writers were really smart because they created the Romulans to be a counterpoint to the Vulcans, but they made them share the same ancestry. It's so complex. I could go on for days about it, honestly.
But that would be highly illogical, his dad said in a robotic voice.
Good one, he said. But can you see where lying about being one and really being the other could get you into some trouble with the Federation?
Sure, his mom said. But what the hell does this have to do with anything, Saul?
It has to do with the fact that Tarsus lies about who he is. And you can just see the guilt ripping him apart. You can see it on his face. And he says it's a mistake that'll be with him for the rest of his life.
Spill it, his mom said.
I don't want to make that mistake, okay? I don't want to lie about who I am, even if it doesn't matter. It's who I am. It's part of me.
What is? His dad asked.
I think you already know.
Not many people would consider Solomon Reed lucky. He had debilitating anxiety, a weak stomach, and he was in love with his straight best friend. But in the parent department, he had won the lottery. So he'd always known that when he finally told them, they'd make him feel like it was no big deal, like it didn't change a thing. They'd say they loved him just like he was, that there was no way they couldn't. And that's exactly what they did.
Chapter 24. Lisa Prater. Lisa hadn't been over to see Solomon in 2 days, and she knew he was probably a little thrown off by it. Or maybe he didn't really need her anymore. Maybe nobody did. But she needed him, at least until she could get out of there for good. Lisa had to be rational about this and stop letting her paranoia about Clark and Solomon jeopardize the entire plan. Whether they were in love or not, she couldn't let Solomon find out about that essay, or he may never recover. She needed to try one more time to convince Clark that keeping it a secret was the right thing to do. It wouldn't be easy, though, especially if he was keeping a secret of his own. But for the time being, she was banking on Clark still being hers, and that good old Lisa Prater charm to make things right again. Just before she left her house for Clark's, Lisa decided to check her email. Not surprisingly, it was already signed in to Clark's account. This happened all the time. He didn't have a laptop, and he was always borrowing hers when he came over. Half the time, ever since school had let out, she just let him take it home with him. She was about to log out when curiosity got the better of her, and she started to scroll through his inbox. Most of the messages were from Solomon. She wasn't surprised, because her inbox looked nearly the same. Solomon was sort of an insomniac, so sometimes he'd stay up really late and email them links to funny videos or articles about dumb things like that coffee that comes from Asian tree cat feces. Lisa read over a few of the emails before thinking to click on the sent folder. When she did, the top message was one Clark had written to Solomon the previous night.
"Sol, I was thinking about yesterday, and I just wanted to apologize again if I weirded you out. Let's go swimming tomorrow. With trunks. Ha ha. Clark."
Lisa thought about crying for just a second, but her breakdown at Janice's had destroyed her tear ducts. Instead, she walked downstairs, got in her car, and drove across town to Clark's house. She stood outside the front door for a few minutes before knocking, trying to talk herself out of dealing with this when it still hurt so bad. She just needed him to confess. If he lied to her, it would break her heart. Eventually, instead of knocking, she opened the always unlocked door and walked back to his bedroom. "You have something you need to tell me?" she said from the doorway.
"What?"
He turned back quickly to face her. He was sitting on the floor playing a video game. "Why were you naked at Solomon's?"
"Are you kidding me? How did you even know that?"
"I read your email. Just answer the question."
"You read my email?"
he asked, getting up off the floor.
"Why would you do that?"
"Look, I'm glad I did, or you'd try to stretch this out even longer."
"Stretch what out? Can you please tell me what the hell is going on?"
"You want to explain to me what that email meant?"
"I got to Saul's yesterday, and the dude was skinny dipping, so I just dropped my shorts and jumped in. I thought it would be funny."
"It's not."
"It's kind of funny," he said. "He was just out there swimming around naked. I love that guy. He's so weird. I figured it wouldn't bother him. You know I have no shame. I spend most of my time wearing Speedos in front of complete strangers."
"But he's gay. Don't take your clothes off in front of boys who like boys."
"What are you, my grandmother?" he said. "Just because I'm a guy doesn't mean he wants to jump my bones."
"You're right," she said. "But he's obviously in love with you, and I'm not sure the feeling isn't mutual."
"Oh, yeah?"
he asked, standing up. She wasn't sure she'd ever seen him this angry.
"So what you're really here to ask is if I'm gay?"
"We used to be together all the time, you know? Now I only see you at Saul's. It's like I pick you up, take you to daycare, and then take you home. And most of the time, I'm just sitting there watching you guys fawn over each other."
I can't help we like the same stuff. You're the one who introduced us. And if you think that makes me gay, then maybe you're the last person who should be helping someone else. Why can't you just tell me the truth, Clark? You're really convinced, aren't you? Wow. Well, the last time I saw you naked, you couldn't wait to get dressed. And now I find out you're stripping down at Solomon's like it's no big deal. Because it isn't, he said, raising his voice. Are you seriously that insecure? Lisa stayed silent for a few seconds, looking up at Clark where he stood. He was so aggravated, his eyes were tearing over, and he stared down with a look of deep disappointment on his face. If you're not gay, then what's wrong with us? She asked quietly.
I don't know, he said. All you talk about is getting out of here, and we both know that even if you do get into Woodlawn, the chances of me going somewhere close by are pretty slim.
I can't afford to go without the essay anyway.
I'm sure you'll figure something out.
That's unlikely, she said, standing up. I feel crazy. I really do. I see the way you look at each other, the way you are together. It's so obvious.
Look, I can't help whatever feelings Saul has for me, okay? That's not my fault.
You keep going back, she said. Don't you think there's a reason you love going over there so much?
Yeah, he said, because I finally have a friend who isn't completely self-consumed.
Clark, just be who you are, and I'll still love you.
Get out, he said, eerily calm. Oh my God, get out. I'm done with this.
Clark shut his bedroom door behind her, and she walked slowly down the hallway to the front door. She passed by Drew, shooting basketball in the driveway, but Lisa never said hello or even acknowledged her. She just got in her car and drove off. If he was telling the truth, then that meant he'd fallen out of love with her for another reason, and she just wasn't ready to accept that. Her suspicions had been right. That was the only logical explanation for Clark's actions. He could deny it all he wanted to, but the second he told her to get out, Lisa knew she didn't really know him anymore. Clark was obviously too afraid to admit the truth. And why wouldn't he be? They lived in a town full of middle-class conservatives, and a celebrated high school athlete coming out of the closet would be big news. And being the one gay guy on the water polo team did not sound like the kind of attention Clark would ever want or need. So she could see why telling her the truth was so hard for him, and why asking her to leave had been the smartest thing Clark could have done. Now she could help him, despite the heartache it would cause her. She drove to Solomon's house and parked in the driveway. She knew he'd probably be outside, where he wouldn't hear the doorbell, so she hopped the back fence. She immediately saw Solomon floating on a raft in the middle of the pool. He had on sunglasses, so she wasn't sure if he was asleep or awake until she stepped closer and he turned her way.
Lisa, thank God, it's too quiet here.
Hi, she said, slipping off her flip-flops and sitting at the edge of the pool. She put both feet in, and Solomon paddled his raft over toward her.
What's up? Where's Clark?
Home, she said. We kind of had a fight.
Oh, I didn't know you guys did that.
We don't. Not usually. I don't know. He's been acting weird lately.
Weird how?
Well, I really only see him if it's over here, and not that I don't like hanging with you or whatever, but, you know, it would be nice to get some time alone.
No, I get it, he said, a guilty look on his face.
I think he likes you, she said, biting her lip and getting it over with.
What?
He took off his sunglasses. I think maybe he likes you how he used to like me.
I don't think so, Lisa. You just need to talk to him.
I've known Clark for a long time, and I've never seen him as happy as he is over here. He gets around you, and it's like he turns into a little kid again. And you can't tell me you don't feel the same. I know you do.
Lisa,
It's okay. I'm not mad. Please don't think I'm mad. I just didn't expect him to reciprocate, that's all. I thought we were safe.
Safe? Wow.
No, I didn't mean it like that.
I came out to my parents yesterday. My grandma, too.
Really? That's so great, Saul. Is it? Or is it dangerous?